thousand stories of what they think you're like, but I've heard the tender whisper of love in the dead of night, and you tell me that you're pleased and that I'm never alone. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. Oh, and I've seen many searching for answers far and wide, but I know we're all searching for answers. Only you provide, 'cause you know just what we need before we say a word. You're a good, good father.
Father by Chris Tomlin. Good morning. My name is Katharina Vidi, and this is Listen Up. Jesus is on the air. Good morning. Good morning. Happy Saturday. Happy weekend of Father's Day. And I just thought of that song today, and I just want to dedicate it to all of our, you know, all of our fathers who have just loved us and have have been a good, good father to us, and also to our Lord, who is a good, good father and has given us Jesus Christ and all of the blessings. So today, in a special way, we just want to remember our fathers and all the sacrifices that they've made for us. And sometimes that maybe we've taken for granted, sometimes not knowing, or just going about our daily life. So this weekend we want to say thank you, and we want to just show our dads how much we love them. So today is going to be a great show. We have Sister Joyce here, who is a Dominican sister, and she's going to be sharing with us about the environment and Pope Francis Laudato Si and other topics. And we have Father Peter here as well. And it's just such a blessing. I want to say thank you again to Father Peter, because this show really is so blessed by him always coming and his knowledge, and just, you know, just very down to earth and his loving care for us. So I just wanted to say thank you. And thanks, and you're a father happy too. So we want to say thank you to our priests for all that they do for their children, fathers.
And we just got through with Mother's Day, and we really honored our moms and his sisters here. She's a spiritual mother too. So we have, lots to share ultimately as things go along. And, and she's caring for the earth right now. So this is an interesting topic for us.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just so blessed in this room right now. I have a sister and a father, and it's just a great place to be. But Sister Joyce, I just want to say, Sister, that you live out your name so beautifully. Every time I see you, you're so joyful, and you have that gift of the Lord, that the Holy Spirit working through you. So I just wanted to say thank you as well, that you radiate that. It's just such a blessing.
Thank you, Katerina.
Oh, no problem. So today we're going to talk, to get started, a little bit about fatherhood and what that's about, and what the Lord teaches us about that. And I know Father Peter would like to share a little bit about that. And we always we think of Saint Joseph as a model for fatherhood, and there's other people. So Father, what would you like to mention?
Well, it's certainly a wonderful time, Father's Day. It's a wonderful, wonderful time for us to get in touch with so much of our experience that has made us who we are, our moms and our dads. But of course, we also look in the context of today at the social problems that are there with fatherhood. So I just wanted to just give a secular source right in the beginning. In the Times the other day, David Brooks, who's one of their columnists, he's kind of a liberal conservative, or a conservative liberal, I don't know how you call him, but he also deals in the area of values a lot in his columns. You know, he's I don't know whether he's sort of from a secular values point of view. I think he's open to the spiritual, but he keeps his religious convictions pretty well hidden, as far as I know. But it's a wonderful thing. But he's talking about millions of poor children and teenagers grow up without their biological father, and often when you ask them about it, they have a litany of male barbarism. You hear teens describe how their dad used to beat up their mom, how an absent father had five kids with several women and abandoned them all. And of course, when you ask the absent fathers themselves, you get a different picture. You meet guys who desperately did not want to leave their children, who swear they have tried to be with them, who feel unworthy of fatherhood but don't want to be the missing dad their own father was. In truth, when fathers abandon their own children, it is not a momentary process. And then so he goes on, pregnancy is rarely planned among the populations these people studied. I have to skim along. Typically, the parents are in a semi-relationship that is somewhat between a one-night stand and an actual boyfriend-girlfriend bond. The couple use contraception at the beginning, but when it becomes understood that they are together, they stop. They don't really talk about pregnancy, but they sort of make it possible. when the men learn that their partner is pregnant, they don't panic or lament all the freedom they are going to miss. On the contrary, 3/4 of these men in this research were joyful at the news. These guys often have a lot of negativity in their lives. The child is a chance to turn things around. The men at this stage are filled with earnest resolve. They begin to take the relationship more seriously. This is of course how they are reporting it now. The key weakness is not the father's bond to the child, it's the parents' bond with each other. They usually went into this without much love or a sense of commitment. The fathers often retain a traditional and idealistic leave-it-to-beaver view of marriage. They dream of a perfect soulmate. They know this woman isn't it, and they're still looking around. Buried in the rigors of motherhood, the women, meanwhile, take a very different practical view of what they need in a man. Will this guy provide the financial stability I need? And if not, can I trade up to someone who will? Okay, and so on. It goes on and on. And of course, and he makes some secular suggestions, which are good. But I think from our religious perspective, we need to realize that fatherhood, you know, comes from God. Motherhood comes from God. Also, St. Paul says, you know, we honor the Father from whom all fatherhood, or all family, sometimes is a way to translate it, takes its name. So in other words, God's abundant love, his procreative love, and his nurturing love, and his protective love, his fatherly love, are key elements of this whole thing. So we're really celebrating God and fathers at the same time. All right, the huge social problems today, we can discuss a little bit of that, but let's celebrate. Let's be sure to get in touch with the greatness of our dads. You know, in spite of their frailty and or their inadequacy in some ways, they really oftentimes made sacrifices which we hardly understand. I often tell younger people, you'll never know who your father and mother were until you're at least 40. You know, you'll never really know what kind of people they are, because you haven't lived enough yet to know what they went through or what it cost them to do certain things. But anyway, we've got a great day on our hands with and God's all a piece of it. So I ask everybody in church at my Mass to shake the hands of any man there and say Happy Father's Day. Whether you're a father or not, it's a big day for you as a man. So try to get in touch with the good things God is showing you.
Yeah, amen. I love what you were saying about sometimes we don't see the man's perspective, or sometimes it's just when you were mentioning about the father leaving, and we just think, oh, like, he's a bad person, like, how could he do that? But that article kind of flipped it and made you think of some positive things.
Brooks backs it up with a lot of research. I mean, people trying to do their best, they're wounded themselves, you know, drugs and crime and jail time, and are often, you know, in this class of people, talking about, you know, not just one particular race, but every disadvantaged situation you have. So you have really a complex thing. You know, what is the way out? Well, surely from the Christian point of view, you know, coming in contact with God our Father is going to be the first and the big help. And you know that just Sister will be here, give us a female perspective on things. But it's interesting, even in the New Testament, you know, Luke takes Mary's side and Matthew takes Joseph's side, you know, in the whole thing. It really is true. It's an amazing thing. And of course, you know, poor Joseph is a typical man. It's amazing. He's over his head. He's over his head. But with God, he comes out with his feet on the ground and does a good job.
Yes. And I just wanted to mention to our listeners that if you would like to call in today or text in, our call-in number is 631-888-8811. And the text-in number is 516-784-6081. We invite you, if you have anything to share about your dads and just want to make a shout-out, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to mention anything to us, you know, how the show is going or anything, just feel free. So,
could I say something?
Yes.
I thought it was beautiful, Father, how you brought in the connection between fatherhood to the Father of us all, God. Because last Sunday was Trinity Sunday.
That's right.
And that's my favorite feast of the whole year. That's God's feast.
Okay.
And God is the source of it all. Father Michael Himes described God. He said the least incorrect thing we could say about God was that God is pure self-gift, and that creation is simply the self-gift of God outpoured.
Outpoured. Right.
So, because love wishes to beget. And my own father, I can never thank my own father enough. He was always there for us. He was a very quiet man.
Well, tell us one story about it.
Okay.
Give us one good story.
Okay, one good story. I was a kind of a tomboy.
A tomboy.
I had this lovely new skirt that I had gotten, and we were going to visit relatives. And my mother said, "Joyce, you better not wear that, because knowing you, you're going to mess it up, or tear it." I said, "Oh, no, I'll be fine." So we get there. It's in Rocky Point, and I started climbing up this hill, and I stepped on the hem of the skirt and rip. Well, I knew my mother would be very upset, so I ran back to the house, and I asked my mother's friend, "Could you get my father?" And she did, and he got him into a room. My father sewed. My father could do anything. He sewed my skirt. Meanwhile, my mother said, "Where is George? Where is George?" He was there,
and he saved my neck.
So that's my dad.
Oh, great, great. Well, it's great that you can still use that expression, "He could do anything."
Yes.
Because that's typical of a young boy or a young girl, you know, that they think their dad and their mom, too, can do so many things.
Welcome, Tim. We also have Tim Froman here, who just walked in. He's from St. Catharines, and he makes all of our CDs. So just thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm walking in. So we were just talking. Sister was just mentioning about her dad and how God's love is just a pure gift and outpoured. Sister would...
You wanted maybe Tim? Is it Tim?
Yes, it's Tim.
Maybe Tim would like to share. What are you a father?
Yes, I am.
What would you like to share about fatherhood as we celebrate this weekend?
Yeah, it's
I have three children, and my daughter Caitlin is 23, and I have a son who's 19.
All right.
And I have my little guy who's 12, who's outside that I'm trying to get in.
Yeah, you could come in. Yeah, come in.
We have some seats.
Yeah, let me just grab him. Okay,
problem.
Sure, bring him right in.
Yes.
He's going to be proud of his dad today,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is.
He's going to be proud.
Mm-hmm.
My son's friend that he had a play date today.
Okay, and, very good.
That's
Hello,
my
welcome.
Wife's girlfriend's daughter.
All right.
And we just drove out, but it's great being a dad. It was actually married 31 years. We were married 7 years before we had our first.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Very good.
How's the mic? Good? Okay.
Yes, it's good. Just tell us a little bit about what did you feel when you first became a dad and just...
it was very exciting. I remember when my daughter Caitlin was born, and it was a wonderful experience. The kids are about like 4 or 5 years apart. Right now she's working on Wall Street now. For a dermatology office. She's an office manager. Mm-hmm. And she's doing great over there. She loves her job. We think she's going to be getting engaged soon.
Wow.
So that's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
My son, who's 19, he went to we went to 2 World Youth Days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went to the one that was in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that was a big father and kid thing.
That was very nice. We were in Fatima, and he's an altar server, and he served at the Fatima Shrine.
Oh wow!
And that was a wonderful experience.
Mm. And you also got were very blessed to carry the statue of the Blessed Mother during the procession.
We had the procession, and the procession it was just I guess it was Father Johnny being as pushy as he is. He was able to get us me and Enzo
and my
Katarina's dad,
well. Mm-hmm.
And we carried the statue that that it had the crown in it with the bullet that.
Went through St.
John. Yeah, what was it? Pope John Paul II, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He was
and
was
that
shot.
Was in the crown, and we carried that in a procession, and that was a real wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, so the World Youth Days were very exciting. We had a good time. The second one we went to was in Rio, but we missed the one that was in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that son, he's 19 now, and he's a helicopter pilot. Yeah, he flies helicopters.
In the Air Force or in the...
It's a subsidiary of the Air Force. Oh, it's called the Civil Air Patrol.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and...
But just the day-to-day experience of fatherhood. Tell us a little bit about that. Some of the daily stuff that
Last night. I got called into work. I run a power plant, and it's a 1,300 megawatt power plant. We supply 1/3 of Manhattan's electric power. And I got a call that we had. There's a main gas line that goes into the power plant, and it blew. A safety valve started lifting. It failed, and it's supposed to lift at a rating of 400 pounds of gas line coming into the plant, which is about a 3-foot line, and it started lifting at 325 pounds, and it was blowing gas off, and it was an explosive condition.
Uh-oh.
So we had to shut the whole facility down. I was there all night. We shut the facility down. We had a depressurizer last night.
And you're here now?
Yeah,
not,
I got home. I got home at 7 o'clock
in
the morning.
And you're still in bed?
Yeah, I got home at seven in the morning.
This is a real man here.
Now, as we're doing this, I get a phone call from my little guy because my wife was out with her girlfriends at a Daryl Hall concert in the city, and so my little guy was home alone, and my two other kids were out. Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls up and the house alarm's going off. So I'm in the middle of this gas thing going on and then the house alarm and I'm like, I'm on the phone with him and I'm like,
fatherhood.
That's fatherhood right there.
You get pretty nutty.
And you're worried about your kid too. You're worried about the plant, but you're worried about the kid too. Sure,
so
sure.
Loads of fun.
Sure.
And all the while I was texting Tim, hey Tim, are you going to come tomorrow to the show? And he's like, can't talk right now. I got this.
And in the middle of that I have I was walking. I had my glasses, and just before you called, my glasses fell off, and I stepped on them. Like,
Oh, wow!
Boy, so had a busy night.
A busy night, but you're
talk about
here
having to keep you cool. That's beautiful, beautiful.
And we're
but
so
everything
blessed.
Went good.
Oh, good.
These are the beautiful, beautiful men.
The beautiful
that
men.
We have so many of, and don't always make headlines by no means.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, very welcome.
They do the dirty work sometimes or put themselves at risk. And, that just reminded me of the firefighters and cops and so many fathers in the military who sacrifice and, who just give of themselves. And, and that's God's love right there through their actions. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So anyway, Pope Francis is talking about the men a little bit. It's in his Amoris Laetitia, the joy of love and on love in the family. And it's like an encyclical. It's called an apostolic exhortation.
Okay.
But I just thought a paragraph or two might be good on the men's side of it. Mm-hmm. Men play an equally decisive role in family life, particularly with regard to the protection and support of their wives and children. Many men are conscious of the importance of their role in the family and live their masculinity accordingly. The absence of a father gravely affects family life and the upbringing of children and their integration in society. This absence, which may be physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual, deprives children of a suitable father figure. So, hopefully, men will realize they must be physically present, but sometimes it's difficult for that emotional and psychological presence to be there. So if we circle around to that, we'll find. But it's really amazing that you had this practical problem, and your fatherhood was torn. You had your job responsibility, and yet your kid was worried.
Yeah, that's why God invented texting.
but Pope Francis is, speaking about that. He said, and of course, with trying to be, correct and not, weigh it one side or another. But there's an ideology of gender that denies the difference in reciprocity and nature of a man and a woman and envisions a society without sexual differences, thereby eliminating the anthropological basis of the family. All right, and so forth and so on. But it points out that, a mother will handle her role in one way as a woman, a father will handle it in another way as a man. But when we both are working together in love for each other, in love for the kids, something terrific can happen. So glad you told me that story. Yeah.
But we actually met Pope Francis when we were in Rio. His car, the Popemobile, was going down and was right in front of us, and just one in a million, it just stopped right by where we were. And he gets out of the car, he's shaking hands with everybody. Father Johnny's trying to get in there, but he's like too short. And
well, that's perfect. He could like squeeze in, you know.
Me and your dad got in there.
But you shook Pope Francis' hand?
No, we came close. I almost got him, but he shook the hand of the person next to me. Almost got him.
Wow, so you were like right there.
We were right there. He just stopped and got out of the car and started shaking hands with everybody. Me and your dad were right there. Father Johnny's like trying to climb over everybody.
Wow, that's great.
You could have like brought Father Johnny.
Yeah, I could have pretended he was a baby and handed it and handed him right back. That ain't no baby. that's
amazing.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Father Johnny's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We had a blast with him.
Such a blessing. And I was just mentioning before that we can remember priests as fathers as well and all that they do. And that for their parish.
Priests just have a lot more kids than we do.
Yeah. They have a lot more to think about, right?
But they don't have to put them to bed at night.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
Yeah, they can. That's right. Okay, that's good. I can leave that.
They can tell close a few jokes church, and then take off. Yeah, that's true. It's really true. But it is beautiful because we do get back to the fatherhood of God, and it's not to diminish the role of a mom, but the biblical tradition gives us Abba Father. This is a wonderful book by a person who did a lot of work in deliverance ministry to the Lozanos, and of course it talks about the fatherhood of God, you know, as something that's really very, very important for folks today. Okay, so I just wanted to share just a tiny little bit of that. A father loves to say yes, and I think this is they're talking about God too. Fear not, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you a kingdom. I often had to say no to my four boys, and it was hard. Sometimes they wanted something that was not good for them, and other times they wanted something we could not afford. They needed to learn that not everything they desired was good, and that saying no to some things would mean saying yes to others. Knowing that these lessons were valuable did not make it easier for me, for in my heart I always wanted to say yes. Now that I have granddaughters, I realize it would have been even harder to say no to a daughter. So I thought that revealed a little bit of a father's true love and affection for his kids, and how important it was for him sometimes to say no, but how it tore him apart.
He's the one that says yes, and I always get in trouble for my wife.
That's right. If the kid wants the money, you give it to him. Even if you don't really have it, you give it to him.
Just don't tell your mother.
I'm sure a lot of parents can relate to that. And when you were saying before about the father, the role of the father and the mother, I also thought of St. John Paul II's theology of the body,
right,
and how men and women are created differently in love, but still able to carry out the roles of being a mother and a father.
And both are needed.
Both are needed, yes.
And so right now we're going to play a song to just break it up a little bit and think of God's goodness and his creation and making us out of love. And when we come back, we're going to be mentioning more about fatherhood, and also Sister Joyce will be sharing about care for the environment, an amazing topic. So keep listening.
Every word of every story, every star and every sky, every corner of creation lives to testify. Every hand that reaches out, every hand that reaches out to offer peace, every simple act of mercy, every that the kingdom come. All the hope in every heart will speak what love has done.
We're back, so we're testifying to love here right now. And if you want to call in or text in, join us. Our telephone number here is 631-888-8811, and our text in number is 516-784-6081. And so we're going to turn it over now to Sister. And as I mentioned, she's a Dominican sister, and her congregation is in Amityville mm-hmm. on Long Island, mm-hmm. right here on Long Island. And it's so amazing. She was telling me that they have an organic farm, and they teach people in the neighboring community or schools, mm-hmm. just anybody who wants, how to garden and how to take care of nature and plants. And they also have a beehive that makes mm-hmm. honey. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That sounds really delicious, right?
You brought honey, right?
Did you bring honey? No. Maybe another time. But, yeah, tell us, Sister, about...
Well, many people think that this Laudato Si, which is... It isn't just environment. People think of the word environment simply as the physical aspects around you. And starting back 27 years ago, on World Peace Day, Pope John Paul II gave his World Peace Day message. It was a 12-page letter from which he spoke. And it was entitled, The Ecological Crisis, A Moral Responsibility. That was 27 years ago. And he talked to us about a world view. Now, most of us who are older, we grew up in a worldview that thought of each individual as separate, and separate. Nature was like a background to us, mm-hmm. Almost like a stage on which humans lived. Mm-hmm. But going way back to the early church, all right, theology and the nature and the human were like a three-legged stool. They were interconnected, and we saw that God, who's creator of everything, in the Book of Wisdom, it tells us that God's imperishable spirit is in all things. And so that, like St. John Damascene, back in early, I forget whether it's the 4th or 5th century, said, every creature is an icon of the face of God. Hmm. St. Thomas Aquinas said, every creature is a footprint of God. Hmm. And so creatures reveal to us another aspect of God. And Thomas Aquinas, who was a Dominican, by the way.
That's right. Bring that That's in. Right. Take a bow, sister. Yes, take a bow.
He said that when God created, the divine goodness was so great that God wanted to share that, to outpour it, and that he created many different creatures, okay, so that what was lacking in the divine goodness in one would be found in another. And so that no creature is contain all of God, but he said that all creation taken together better manifests God than any single individual creature whatsoever, that we're all connected. So John Paul II, in writing this, he brought up the word ecology and integral ecology, which means the human and the natural world. You couldn't have a human community without a water community. No water, we don't exist. The plants don't exist, the animals. No air, oxygen, we don't exist. The animals don't exist, all right? Most of them. Some are anaerobic. They can live without water, the bacteria, all right? And if you have no soil for plants to grow, if that's not there, no human community. We're part of all of that. So as we poison or we destroy or harm these life systems, we are literally destroying ourselves and the creation God made. It's one in Romans 8, St. Paul tells us that all creation, not just humans, all creation is groaning even until now to be brought to fulfillment. And that comes through Jesus. All things were made through him, the Word of God. All things were made for him. He is before all else that is. And all things are reconciled in him, things in heaven and the earth. So we have this organic garden. Why? Why? Because the pesticides we have been using and the herbicides we have been using are to the point that after World War II, I think there were a little less than 20 types of insects that were like immune to our different methods of controlling them. Mm. Now there's over 400. Mm. And our bee colonies are destroying. So I was always interested in God as truth. The Dominican Order's motto is truth. And I love both science and I love religion, and the two. Science teaches us how the world works. Religion teaches us why it's there.
Yes.
And who started it. Mm. What is it all about?
It was just making
What's
me think
it for?
With the EPA. Like, yes. For example, the EPA, like one of the insecticides was chlordane, and chlordane was very persistent. And that would stay in the ground for about 10 years before it would degrade. So now with the EPA, they came in with insecticides that are required to completely break down after 3 months. So after 3 months, they're completely broken down. And that way, at least they're a bit safer.
Good. Yeah. But the thing is, I forget which company has just been permitted to start manufacturing that dichlorane, 1.4, I think it's dichlorane again. So that is not
Yeah, that
good.
Stuff is very persistent.
Very persistent in the atmosphere. Well, a sister in our community and myself, we both at different times were very interested in how do we start protecting this land, especially on Long Island. We used to have many farms. I remember Levittown used to be potato fields
all
and
farms,
so.
All farms.
Yeah, Franklin Square, where we are, that was all potato
all
farms. Farms.
Yeah. For the
all right.
Mostly rot camps. Farms. Remember rot right. camp?
So, rot yes, camp. A rot camp.
The rot
right
camps
in
were in there.
Sure. We had many. So, Sister started that in 1997, our farm started. This will be the 20th anniversary. And the purpose was to work sustainably the way both Pope John Paul II and Pope Francis, now 25, he did it, he wrote his encyclical Laudato Si in 2015.
That's the environmental one, yeah.
Yeah, that's what that's about. And it's building on Pope John Paul II, who picked out what was happening. There's one line here, it says, that I'd like to read.
You could just go a little closer.
Oh, I'm sorry. A new ecological, I see I can put that here. A new ecological, I can't see it that far. Let me see if I can know. Let me see if I can speak loud enough back here. A new ecological
That's good.
Occurrence is beginning to emerge, which rather than being downplayed, ought to be encouraged to develop more concrete programs and alternatives. And Pope John Paul II goes into the deforestation. Like the earth is like an organism, a living organism. The forests and the phytoplankton in the oceans and the grass, all of that produces oxygen. They're like the lungs of the planet. The rivers and streams are like the bloodstream of the planet. The wetlands are like the kidneys. They filter out the wastes. And as we destroy or harm these different things,
it has a domino effect.
Yes. Well, in 1999, I studied at Genesis Farm, which is an Earth Literacy Center. We had some scientists from NASA there also as well helping us. And then I went to study at the Global Education Associates, which is a Catholic organization, which has offices in 90 different countries to bring a moral dimension to, like, poverty, human trafficking, war, to the environmental issues. And they had us become interns at the UN, and there was a big environmental conference. I studied environmental issues. And in 1999, at that conference, they told us that there were over 100,000 human-made chemicals, and only 2,000 had been tested.
Wow.
Only 2,000 at that point. All right. So, and in 1959, when I started teaching, I had 51 children in St. Agnes in Rockville Center. I had one child with asthma, and I had about 8 children with allergies. When I stopped formal teaching in a regular school in 1997, I had 32 children in my class. I had about 7 children with asthma and more than half the class with allergies.
Wow.
We're polluting ourselves. We're polluting ourselves, causing all kinds of... You can't have healthy people on a sick planet. And people don't realize that. So Pope John Paul II talked about our moral responsibility to live a simpler lifestyle, and that the earth is not just for certain people, it's a common gift from God to us all, and that all of us should reap both the joys of it and take care of its problems. So he's calling us each to try to work on those problems in our own lifestyle. He said we can become over consumers. We can more and more, we have to have this, we have to have that. The children are taught on TV, they get a gospel of greed. You must have this to be happy. You must get this to be happy. You have to look like that to be happy. And so the children more and more consider what's important is something outside them, what they have or what they look like, not who they are and how they act to one another.
Yeah, so some people don't realize the preparation that went into the earth. For example,
right.
Like 4.5 billion years,
right.
We had life on the planet. There was stromatolites. That was the first form of life. And if you look at human existence, mm-hmm. and if you look at if human existence was a 10-mile road, if you had a 10-mile road from when the first traces of life were on the planet 4.5 billion years ago, and then and that was 10 miles long all the way up until now, human existence would only be a 32nd of an inch compared to that entire existence. That's how mm-hmm. long God was preparing the planet. And for example, the fuel oils and everything is from the phytoplankton and zooplankton mm-hmm. that was in the early oceans, and then that ended up becoming a fuel oil and a coal that took billions of years to form.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that God put humans in existence at their exact right time when all that stuff came to maturity that was able to be utilized.
But today, now we have to keep it underground. Because what's happening, as we're burning it now, we're releasing more of the carbon dioxide. And as the earth warms, we have methane from cattle, we have more and more cattle, and it's 20% of the methane comes from raising cattle. We're cutting down the Amazon rainforest for McDonald's.
Yeah.
They're growing, yeah. They're raising their cattle in the Amazon rainforest, a good deal of their cattle. People mm-hmm. don't know this. And as you cut down, especially old growth forests, you are cutting down what holds that carbon down into the earth.
Yeah, and I've also like seen with power plants, with the first power plant that was in was the JFK facility, which supplies Kennedy Airport, and our nitrous oxides were, we had our Title V was at 8.4 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm in a brand new power plant, and that's down to 2 parts per million.
Good.
And it's making huge headways with power plants, I can tell you that much.
Okay.
Right now we have a power plant that's 1,300 megawatts.
Right.
We're putting out less pollutants than a jet idling on a runway.
Well, that's wonderful.
And so that got cut down tremendously.
Mm.
And they do that through catalytic reactors, through ammonia injection, all kinds of different things to knock down the pollutants.
And also in our cars, right?
Yeah, the cars are putting out a lot less.
But now some of those restrictions are now being lifted so that they don't have to follow those restrictions.
Isn't it a serendipity that you've got a dialogue partner here who knows a little bit about chemicals?
Yes, yeah, definitely.
This wasn't even planned.
No,
because he knows so much, and that is beautiful for people to know, for me to know. But it's also to know, like for instance, for the life systems on Earth to be fairly healthy, you shouldn't have more than 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in our air to keep things going on a normal basis. We have over 400 parts per million now. All right? And what's happening? Why is that so bad? It used to be that before we had a problem with the ozone layer back, and we changed that. Through technology, we stopped.
Yeah, that was from hydrochlorodifluoromethanes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a chemical engineer?
No, a mechanical engineer. But I got into the chemical aspect of it because the treatment of our waste gases and stuff.
And keep up your good work, because I had a friend of mine.
That was refrigerant. Mostly, that was R11 was the worst offender, and they cut R11 out. R11 was really attacking the ozone layer, but they phased out R11. And they came out with some new refrigerants that almost do nothing to the ozone.
All right. So what Pope Francis is doing, building on what Pope with regard to the garden, what we do, right? We have joined the North East Organic Farmers Association, like Cornell Cooperative Extension works with us with the farms on Long Island. Many of them now are organic, especially at the East End. They're trying to protect their land and soil. And so we bring children. For 10 years, I was a teacher with the children. After I retired, I had open heart surgery. So we had, I had 10 years with the other sister, we created a curriculum for the children to understand the beauty of God's creation. How do we protect it? How do we take care of it? How are we connected to it? And how can we keep it good? Yeah. And so they would pull out, we had inner city children come. And they had never seen a carrot coming out of the ground. They thought the carrots practically grew in the grocery store.
In
other words, they just thought they got there. They didn't know.
They made a factory.
They didn't know where they came from.
Yeah.
In other words, but they have it, and then to taste it, we had washed them all off, and it was so sweet compared to the chemicals that you get. We have Eagle Scouts who work at our farm, who do projects at our farm for us, raise beds so that the elderly can work. We have had high school science teachers come. We've had summer programs for teaching how to, compost, how to not waste. Production on Earth in nature, it has something grows, it lives, produces, it dies, but then it's recycled by nature to create something else.
Yeah. And some people don't realize that the whole solar system is actually in a particular balance. For example, like the Earth is on a 23-degree axis. The moon actually keeps the Earth like an outrigger of a canoe in balance.
Good.
So like the other planets like Mercury, Venus, Mars that don't have a large moon, the tilt is 90 degrees. So if the Earth did that and tilted 90 degrees, it would put the polar ice caps on the equator at different points. Every 11 years, the polar ice caps would be in a different spot on the equator. You'd be in 2 miles of ice. It would kill all life on Earth. So the moon, being exactly a quarter, or pretty close to the quarter of the size of the Earth, keeps the Earth on its axis and enables life to be balanced.
To continue.
And also the moon the reason that the moon appears in the sky the same exact size as the sun is because the moon, the sun is exactly 400 moon diameters, and the moon is 400 times closer, and it puts it in bounds. The moon was first formed was 4.5 billion years ago. It's been moving away from the Earth at an inch and a half a year.
Right.
So the now it's in perfect bounds. So there's in 4.5 billion years from now, we actually lose the moon. It, mm-hmm. it goes out into space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at an exact midpoint right now from the formation. So there's a 9 billion year relationship between the moon and the Earth. And the interesting part is this: it's at the exact point where the moon is the same size in the sky as the sun in perfect balance. And that happened right when human existence came along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like everything was all prepared in order. So like you look at like it, that's like it's almost like proves the existence of God that you know that things are in such a balance.
Well, they have said scientists that, and it isn't just a theory, that with the Big Bang or however you start that,
and that was actually discovered by a Catholic priest. The
yes,
Big Bang,
yes, yeah, Lemaître.
Lemaître, yes.
Yeah. All right.
And yeah, he's the first one. He actually calculated the 13.7 billion years mathematically by hand.
Before
and that's
others.
Only was adjusted to 13.8 recently.
Right.
That's how accurate he was.
Well,
but
marvelous.
It's mostly it's misattributed to Edwin Hubble. Edwin Hubble only proved that Lemaître was correct, but the school systems never tell you that Lemaître is the one who discovered the Big Bang.
And what is beautiful there, okay? When that started, had it been 1/1,000,000,000th of a second faster, from that particularity, nothing would have congealed, just gone out. No atoms would have formed. If it had been 1/1,000,000,000th of a second slower, it would have stayed congealed, and you would not have had life.
It's amazing.
So it was like they call it the Anthropic principle.
Correct. Yes.
Where it was like the Earth was preparing.
Yep, and you have 20 cosmological constants, and every one of them was perfectly aligned. It's just amazing. You know,
like so God's God's calculation, and
his
how beautiful
calculation and perfection and love and
well, if you take a deep breath, if all of you here, including those two lovely children of yours, take a real deep breath. Really, do it. Let go. You have breathed in you, atoms from any person or living thing that has lived for at least 3 years on this earth. You have molecules of Jesus Christ in you. You have molecules of your grandparents if they've died, and even if they're still alive, because that's how long it takes those molecules to circulate. 3 years to circulate
particularly
in our
water.
Atmosphere. Yes. And so even living things. Take a look what food, when you eat food, how does that food know how to become a brain cell or a heart cell or a kidney or a bone? All of that is so marvelous. Our human body is such a gift from God. And how do we take care of it? And so taking care of the earth that helped to produce us, God took the dust of the earth and blew into it a living soul, symbolizing how the earth is part of who we are, and we're part of that.
And even if you consider evolution, which I don't know if the Catholic Church actually
supports, John Paul II said it's okay.
But even if that's accepted, if you think about it, it still came from the earth. You know what I mean? Because because before there was any life on the earth, you just had the earth and you had the dirt of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything arose from that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, God worked on that. So the statement that that man was made from the dust of the earth is actually 100% correct.
Yes, and we're also stardust because the earth came forth like when these huge supernovas explode.
Yeah,
it isn't the end of it. God has it so that they produce nebula,
the big chemical labs. Yeah.
Yes, and out of that, every one of our atoms was once in a star.
Yes.
Every one of them. And the mountains. How God just took it together. Like, I could go on forever about how wonderful God is and what God has done.
I just want to...
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I just want to just mention, I got two texts here, and I really just wanted to mention it. So from... there is a request for Lujo my father-in-law, Luciano, and my dad, Joe, from Luciano, saying Happy Father's Day to my dad, Lucio, Nonno, Luciano, and Grandpa Joe.
I think she knows Italian.
I'm blessed to have you all in my life. So it's just such a blessing to have grandfathers as well, fathers, and also another one, Saluti dall'Italia, from my family in Italy as well. And so again, we're just saying Happy Father's Day as well. And like what Sister was saying, how great we were created in God's image, and just out of stardust, mm-hmm. and out of the creation of, we're just so connected in that way.
Everything
is just, you know, so.
God, it's like each of us is like a cell in the human body. Each one is individual, but it's part of the whole. Yep. And each one has its place. And if it's missing, something's missing. And God loves it, wants it all to come together. And how do we help protect one another? How do we protect the earth that helps us to become who we are?
Sure, and St. Paul is good on this one too, sister.
Okay,
look at that.
Good.
We know that all creation is groaning in labor pain,
right.
even until now. And not only that, but we ourselves, who mm-hmm. have been the first fruits of the Spirit, we also groan within ourselves as we await for adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Now hope that sees for itself is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait with endurance. In the same way, the Spirit too comes to the aid of our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes with inexpressible groanings. And the one who searches hearts knows what is the intention of the Spirit, because it intercedes for the body according to God's will. So isn't that a beautiful...
That is gorgeous. That's one of my favorite scriptures.
Oh, beautiful.
One of my favorite
Happy Father's scriptures. Day for everybody. And sister, too, share in it. That was a great story you told about your own dad.
He's a great, delightful man. Oh. Quiet, faithful, and delightful.
Oh, great.
Oh, beautiful.
Good, great memories.
We're just wrapping up here our show. We could go on for hours. I always say there's so much to say, you know, but we're just reminded today to, in our own little ways, to take care of the environment, to recycle. And if you want to learn more about Sister's Farm, you could contact me and we'll get you in contact. And you could go visit if you want, or just anything.
You're not growing grapes for wine, are you?
Grapes for wine, Tim said. One day, maybe.
We also give... I know we're finished, right, with it?
We're going to be finishing up right now.
Oh, we do. The members of the farm, we have about 100 and some odd members, but they give $100 each toward making the Interfaith Nutritional Network in Hempstead. They work. We have given them, like, last year, 2,000 pounds of fresh vegetables. Twice a week, we bring that to their guests. They feed about 400 to 500 people a day.
Beautiful.
So, and then now they have a place where they are training them for new other jobs. Mm. They can take showers there and not just have a meal, but there's job training now for these guests that they have. So it's like the arms of God reaching out to touch people.
That
God
is
bless.
A blessing.
Thank
and
you, sister.
happy Father's Day again, and God bless you. And
God bless you.
And thank you. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Blessed are they, the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are they, full of sorrow, they shall be consoled.